So my first shout out is to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, because the three of us who you've heard from this morning are all Carolina graduates, and apparently it's our 75th anniversary of School of Public Health. So I'll give a little shout out, since I can't give a shout out to my Baltimore Ravens, who are not so good. And congrats to the Red Sox, Marty. Okay, so what I'm going to talk to you about this morning, Chris did a wonderful job laying out the background of healthy housing. Healthy housing has a dramatic impact on kids' ability to go to school. We know that the largest reason that kids don't go to school is asthma, often coming from their home environment, and that leads to a lot of disinvestment by my partners in philanthropy, where we put $4.97 billion a year into educational outcomes, but kids cannot learn if they are suffering from asthma from their home, and certainly from lead poisoning that causes reading disabilities. So I'm going to talk to you about the Green and Healthy Homes Initiative, which began out of the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning work for the 20 years in Baltimore City. The coalition was able to effect a 98% reduction in childhood lead poisoning in the state of Maryland, moving Baltimore from the number one site in the country for lead poisoning to a hopefully more manageable but important problem still. When 2008, after years of working in the lead field and understanding that lead poisoning was and reducing lead hazards was still leaving behind unhealthy children and unstable families, we began to address something very important with our partners at HUD and the Council on Foundations, the Department of Energy, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and the Center for Disease Control, and that was to look at the root causes of housing, but also look at how we approach this process of healthy housing. So let me just start this off with a bit of an example. Chris mentioned the U.S. Surgeon General's call to action in June of 2009. At that call to action, an individual by the name of Dorothy O'Bannon was there from Northwest Baltimore, grew up, and she lives in Park Heights. Her two daughters had been to the hospital 22 times in the year prior to that, to coming into the Green and Healthy Homes Initiative program. And we'll talk about that in a minute and what that impact is. But to solve the environmental health problems of mold and mildew, of lead poisoning, of inefficient heating in her home, prior to coming to GHHI, Mrs. O'Bannon would have had to chase 8 different programs to get the proper funding to address the root causes. What we knew through Dorothy O'Bannon and others is that you couldn't apply weatherization to get to the health problems of extreme heat and extreme cold. If you had mold, mildew, or lead, you would get turned down. You couldn't do a lead program if you had moisture issues and roofing problems. And you couldn't address the pest management and others without all of these programs working together. For her to chase those 8 programs, she would have missed 23 days of work, in addition to the work that she already was missing because of 22 ED visits and hospitalizations, costing each child $53,000 a year in Medicaid expenses. We began to understand there was a better way to apply these programs for common sense, because if we wanted health outcomes, we needed to do that. If we wanted people to actually get into a system, and we also knew that the weatherization and energy efficiency field, which had not thought of themselves as a health field, was really our new face of healthcare, the new frontier for healthcare for us, that if we could do that. And so we began to look at not only the impact on schools and the impact on education, where our funding at the Coalition on Childhood Lead Poisoning came from, and ours is health work, and so those of you seeking funding, go after your education funders. But we began to understand the larger amount of savings, and as I said before I got up here today, that's the part, if you want to ask me questions later, I want to talk about pay for success, how do we capture savings, the Affordable Care Act, but I'll talk to you about GHHI right now, in how we said we can come together and look at this. This to us, we call it our spaghetti model, but this represented the research that we started to do over the years before launching GHHI. we were able to identify 238 lines of funding that if you were a Maryland resident, between federal programs, state programs, philanthropic programs, and private investment, that actually were intended to address housing issues. And all of those housing issues, I will tell you, are health issues. As we look to improve health outcomes, asthma, lead poisoning, economic outcomes, saving money for maintenance, saving money for energy, stabilizes a family in place. And we as a sidebar, as we started to look at this, I'll spout out a bit of data, but this was destabilizing families not to be able to address it, and exhausting them, and is just an inefficient way to do this. And so you got less investment, too, from other sectors, from private sector and philanthropy, because you had an ineffective system of delivering. So we proposed that what we needed to do was to push the alignment of federal agencies' work. You just heard about the Healthy Homes Work Group, and of philanthropic investment to start to set a standard of health-based housing for the 1,000 philanthropies that belong to the Council on Foundations and for the 1,000 cities that belong to the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and to align these issues together. But we also needed to work with city government to teach them how to work with their partners to braid funding. I have grown up in the nonprofit world with the big fear that you can't match federal programs to federal programs. It was a no-no. But in fact, you can. And you can braid them together and braid them with other investments. And so we work in our 20 cities around the country in looking at what are the current assets that exist, the resources that currently exist, and how do we remanage those. But we do it against health issues in the community, and that helps us identify gaps so that we can bring in utility funding and hospital funding and private sector funding. And then the last piece is the coordination of strategies on the ground so they work together. So this is our kind of response to that spaghetti model, is that you can bring these together as long as you are coupling them strongly with education and assessment, that the interventions work together, and that you follow through on long-term work through technical assistance to ensure systems change. So our program isn't about a project of doing a couple of houses or 100 houses or 1,000 houses. We have a big commitment with the Clinton Global Initiative to do 25,000 houses. It isn't about those individual units. It's about a system change on how we deliver health-based housing through standards and how we deliver the money to make that happen. So it's about changing the way of doing business. So the first thing and first element of how we do this is to help to create a single portal of intake. There's no wrong door, effectively, to come in to the system. And I'll use Baltimore as our example of where we are. You can have a family that has a weatherization need that's going to result in mold and mildew and money going out the door. And you can have a family that has a child with asthma. You can have a home with a lead hazards, pregnant women, somebody has a housing need, a family looking to adopt a child through foster care. All of those programs in Baltimore and our other cities all require some degree of housing inspection and assessment. And what we have said now is if you come through any of those doors, we're going to give you the same comprehensive assessment across all of these agencies to look at energy, health, and safety. So however you come in, we are going to look to diagnose your home for the health issues that are there and ensure that action happens. And the way we do it in Baltimore is we send our folks into the field. And so those 23 days of application process become one home visit, where we are scanning documents in and we are doing the research and we are cross-qualifying across 27 different programs to address the health-based housing issues. And while we're there, we're also qualifying people for other things, including food stamps and federal assistance on different programs, to create that efficiency up front and to look at the eligibility differences. One of the original things that we looked to address in Green and Healthy Homes was the differing qualifications that we run people through. 200% of poverty for weatherization, 80% of median income for HUD's healthy housing programs or HOME or CDBG, 125 or 175% for heating assistance, and it's across the board. Families don't think of things in those terms when they've got the problem. We're thinking about those things, but what we did find out is that 95% of the time where we work, people qualify. And one of the things about our program is that we are focused on scattered site, single family housing, 4 units or less, not big multifamily housing. Why? Because that's where 95% of the asthma cases come from and 95% of the lead cases come from, and the high cost of health care and the high cost of energy born in this country are mainly coming from that heavier lift, but it's where the problem is, and so we're looking for root cause back to solution. Also, by doing the single portal of intake, we're eliminating this missed opportunity to address issues, and this has become very, very high in our list. Our second step in this is to do a comprehensive environmental assessment and education together. So we are sending in cross-trained housing inspectors, if you will, who are looking at everything from integrated pest management issues to energy to health and safety. But while we are doing that, we send in an environmental health educator that is certified in asthma and lead poisoning and healthy housing, so that the education process starts with the assessment and stays with the family through all of the work, and then we do 1, 3, 6, 9, and 12 month assessments, because we want to do a very detailed cost-benefit analysis of this work going forward. And so that talk about that a little bit here. And the next piece of this is training those weatherization workers, those lead workers, those housing intervention workers to be trained across the spectrum. EPA has a repair and repainting rule that helped a lot in adding lead safety, but most did not understand healthy housing from a contractor standpoint. And part of this work is to expand that. But what we also know by doing this cross-training is that we increase wages from $2 to $4 an hour. And often, in our communities, the folks that we are training live in housing with these issues, so we help to make them very good ambassadors about health care in their community. And this is a big change that has come. I think many of you know that in January of 2014, Medicaid has now said that they will be eligible for reimbursement to address chronic issues like lead and asthma through community-based activities like this, and this may become one of the real forefronts for funding to help us move the housing industry to a stronger health-based standard. To give you just a quick idea, because I'm running short on time, but this is our map of where GHHI is and where it's going. The green sites are where we have active sites, and we're working, coming online in this space right now is Syracuse and Newark and Lansing, so they should be actually green here. But there is a standard of designation and a standard of the health-based housing interventions that these communities have to meet in order to get designated. Give you a couple of quick pieces here, and I'll see if I can get through it. Just to give you a little bit of background, but we have projects in Dubuque and Providence, which I'll talk about here. But before I get to this one, Mrs. O'Bannon, who I mentioned earlier, 22 visits to the emergency room and hospital, was our very first Green and Healthy Homes Initiative client, $53,000 per child in cost per year. The intervention in her home cost $12,000 versus $106,000 in medical costs. Never been back to the ED, never been back to the hospital. And we could go through hundreds and hundreds of cases like that. But what it has done is afford Mrs. O'Bannon to work, Mrs. O'Bannon to have a savings account, her kids to excel in school, and we have returned back, both to the state of Maryland and the federal government, hundreds of thousands of dollars. In Dubuque, single-family home, older home, child with poorly controlled asthma, lead paint, poor ventilation, overloaded circuits, This is the state of unhealthy housing in the U.S., 6 million families living in this. By doing an integrated intervention, we were able to reduce the ED visits, the hospital visits, which here are more normal in averages, to zero for $12,500. With the proper education and maintenance, we anticipate that at least 3 to 4 years out, we'll see the same results. In our work and data collected to date, we have a 64% reduction in hospitalizations, a 24 to 40% reduction in emergency departments, and a 26% savings for government to braid together. And you see the response here in Dubuque, very similar in Providence, where you had a family with uncontrolled asthma. And these are more normal cases. We went to sort of more conservative cases to look at here. Unvented appliances, lack of insulation, a lot of energy issues around this family with the uncontrolled asthma. Bathroom dryers and gas and kitchen stoves were not properly vented. These are very common things. By fixing these common issues, we reduce the urgent care visits and the emergency visits and the wakings. Kids not only not going to school is important, not going to school and being able to stay awake, to learn, be healthy, these are all important things. And this is what we have seen time and again in Baltimore and others. We are getting these results by putting common sense in place. And so I think we also are pushing the envelope of energy and energy efficiency, and for healthcare providers and health workers to think about poor energy efficiency has dramatic impacts on, obviously, economic stability, which leads to a lot of mental health issues of families, but it also has big impacts on actual environmental health, and we're seeing significant savings across that framework as well, which is why we have DOE there. So this, I gave you the background on our savings that we've seen, and the other pieces that we have around affordable care and pay for success, I'll take in questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ruthann. I just have to say, as a former teacher in Anacostia, D.C., that the impact we're not capturing that we need to really think about is longitudinally what it's going to do for these kids when they're staying in school longer, and how we can start to recognize some cost savings on that end, too, in terms of remedial education and teachers' time, catching up students who've been out. So look forward to that kind of data, too.